I'm sitting here staring at a whole bunch of different stories that I kind of pulled back over the last week since we decided to do this.
One second. Let's get intros out of the way. Let's tell a little bit about each other. I mean, we got some followers on Facebook, but we're going to get some new people tuning in to these Pitbull fanatics.
Yeah, see, you can't even say that because whoever's watching this don't even know what you're referring to.
We're Pitbull fanatics, just so you know. We're Pitbull fanatics. Just like you're a fanatic over your child in your home, you know, you care about your child. You care about the well-being of your child. So would you be considered a child fanatic? Anyway, Josh.
Yeah, before intros, why don't we tell people what made us create this podcast? Because pretty much we were both on the same radio station, and we talked to each other afterwards, and we were like, dude, we don't like how they can control the narrative and, like, cut us off. We make our point. They cut you off. They don't allow you to counter back when you're talking to a complete imbecile like Ken Phillips. So we're like, all right, we might as well just, you know, create our own podcast and be able to talk openly about things. And
social media,
here we are, like a week later.
Social media has allowed everybody to have a voice and thus kind of making the middleman obsolete. And I did a blog. Actually, I did an interview, and I meant to write a blog about it. This guy was doing – these people were doing a – these students were doing a film project, and they wanted the topic to be pit bulls. And the point I made was these people with their media and their biased media and their monopoly on the media, they're going to go away. They're going to go away like Tower Records and the 8-track tape, because now everybody with a camera, with a email, with a computer is going to be able to have their say and do what we're doing right here. And podcasts is a huge phenomenon happening right now where people like us that don't have sponsors behind us or people with an agenda trying to, you know, if it bleeds, it leads, trying to get their crap out. These were just two people here with dogs, with the love for our animals, and with a whole group of people that have love for their animals, that we can get onto this format and tell from our point of view and the stuff that you don't hear in the media and from the people like Ken, what's his face, and we have anybody with a Twitter account, anybody with a Facebook can tell their story of their pit bulls, of their animals, the truth, and we don't need to be on their shows being cut off and being misquoted and being, you know, cut off. You said it. We're doing it ourselves.
Yeah, I mean the show that I was referring to, it was called, for those unfamiliar, I think David Marin is the host, and it's called Mr. Mom Radio. I actually have the entire audio now posted on my YouTube page or on my Facebook page, Facebook.com/SwayLove. You can listen to the entire interview. He had on Animal Control Association president, and then Kenneth Phillips, who is self-proclaimed, he's a dog bite attorney that focuses on just dog bites, but he's a self-proclaimed dog bite king of the world. He's an anti-pit bull puppet for dogsbite.org and Colleen Lynn, basically, and he marches out their talking points. So he was actually on the line, and me and Tino called in to refute some of the anti-pit bull rhetoric being thrown around by Phillips. And so that's kind of what kick-started all of this. But after the interview, Phillips then went on his Facebook page and posted to everybody saying that, oh, my radio interview got bombarded by pit bull fanatics, and they took over the airwaves, when all we did was call up and be like, okay, you guys keep talking about 60% of the fatalities equals pit bulls, which is not even proven, unscientific claim. There's no merit in that, but whatever.
Bullshit.
So I personally called up, and what I had to say was, first of all, the 60%, that's whatever, but even if it was true, let's put it in context. We're talking about 60% of fatalities, dog fatalities per year, like 30. So that was my first point. Just, we're talking about 30 fatalities. 60% sounds really scary when you don't know the actual digit that we're talking about. Yep. We could be talking about 300,000, and 60% of 300,000, that's a lot. But 60% of 30, that's okay. And that, my second point was about breed identification and how the animal control president, they don't even offer a class in it. Their own organization doesn't even offer a class, so they're unqualified to breed identify, basically. Those are my only two points. I don't see how those are fanatical points, you know. But and then you called up and let everybody know what you said or what you called Phillips.
I called him a troll because
he sounded like one.
Because anybody who's been on Facebook long enough, you know that there's people out there. Hold on, I lost you. Can you see me?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know where the video went. Anyone who's been on Facebook long enough knows that there's people out there called trolls that like to just come on and just say stuff just to get a reaction. So you got this guy, this animal control guy that's in the field that knows what he's talking about, telling this lawyer that BSL doesn't work, and then you got another lawyer calling from Aurora, Colorado, saying that not only doesn't work, it's costing the taxpayers money, and it's not diminishing any dog bites. And then yeah. I call on the phone and go, by the way, there's statistics and there's facts that Denmark, UK, Great Britain, there was a whole handful of them, Italy, have all reported, oh, Winnipeg, Toronto, all these countries have reported that BSL is ineffective, it spends money, and dog bites are not down. And then all he says, that's not true. And then so my point was, if I didn't know any better, I would definitely call you a troll, because we're sitting here with people hitting you from facts, all different angles, and you're going, that's not true. You're like the little kid going, rah, 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 rah. You're like, you know, arguing with Galileo that the world is flat.
I mean, the way that he was talking, everything that Philip said was like all-encompassing in nature, meaning if he was trying to make a point, it's like all pit bull owners are this, or all yes. pit bull owners yes. don't want to have their dogs on leash, or all pit bull owners want to do this or that. And it's like, don't you realize you're talking about like literally millions of people? So like if one person does something one way, that doesn't mean the next person does, let alone, you know, millions of us. We're all different, just like our dogs are all different. And the way that Phillips talks is the exact opposite of that, which also I tried to point out before they cut me off. But anyways, how long have we known of each other? Or I know, you know, we met a couple times, we probably met the first time about 2 years ago when you brought your booth down.
We came down to Hawthorne and we were in contact. I don't know how I found out about you. I think I first came across some of your writings and I was really impressed with your writing. I mean, I'm currently writing a book and I can only, you know, hope to write half as well as you write, bro. You're such
man. Really tough. Yeah. I don't have any training. I just kind of like...
thank you, bro. Just say thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
So I came across your writing and I was really impressed. And especially, I mean, it's always great to come across passionate people that want to put their money where their mouth is, that want to help. And, you know, but basically this just comes down to two guys that, you know, we consider our dogs family. And, We're just like, hey, we're not gonna go quietly. You're not gonna spread these lies, and you're not gonna bullshit and further this fear mongering production or whatever.
Do people know that you're writing a book? Like, if you let that cat out of the bag, because if not, you just did.
Yeah, but you know, just like you said, it's a progress. It's a work. You know, I just got this program called Scrivener. By the way, check it out if you're writing Scrivener. It's great. It's for writing, and you can go
for Mac or PC or what?
I think it's for both. But anyway, let's go back to that. We found out about each other, but let's do some who we are. Josh, background? What made you get, you know, going with the with this and get you interested in opening your mouth and letting it be known that this?
Well, I mean, prior to when people, thankfully, when people hear my name, I think I've done a decent job tying my name with the name of my dog. So, like, people either know my dog, Sway, or they know me, and then they immediately think of Sway, which I think is pretty cool because she's no longer here. But, like, she started – that's why I'm passionate about these dogs. Like, I didn't know anything about pit bulls. I didn't – good or bad. I didn't have any bad feelings towards them. I just didn't have that personal experience.
Tell us about Sway. Tell us about Sway.
Once I found her, and again, like when I found her, I didn't know what kind of dog she was. She was just a dog to me, very scared dog. You know, I took her in, and she was within minutes. She was like, I don't know what her life was prior to that, but like once I took her in, and she finally realized that she was safe, and it was okay. Like she was all about me from that point on. Like she was like my shadow.
Yeah.
So this dog was with me for almost 9 years. Unfortunately, she got a pretty gnarly blood disease. I think it was vaccine related, unfortunately. And the last two years of her life was fighting that. But like, man, she was like my shadow for like almost 9 years. Like I love that dog, and based on my experience with her and how special she was to me, that kind of, especially after she passed, made me get into the advocacy side of pit bulls, because I've already lived through kind of the prejudices and the things that you experience when you have one of these dogs, and then, you know, which led me to a shelter eventually when I was going to adopt again. I ended up, go ahead.
If Sway was your first pit bull?
Yeah.
And how long ago was that, and where did you get her?
I found her in 2001. I'm from Ohio, so I was just out at my dad's house, and he lives in the country, and she kind of just was a stray that came out of the cornfield went right at the same time when I was getting mail at his house. So, like, had I not been out the mailbox, I would have never seen her. And I took her in, had her for about 4 years in Ohio, and then I moved out to California, and my mom flew her out after I got settled. Because when I moved here, I actually just decided, hey, I want to move to California. Don't know what I'm going to do. Have a car. Don't have a job. Don't know where I'm going to stay. But I just drove out anyways, and I didn't want to bring Sway with me because I didn't know what my next day was going to look like. So like, thankfully, I have an awesome mom who's, like, super familiar with Sway. She kept Sway for about 3 months while I settled myself, and then we had her flown out here. So
that's awesome, bro.
But before I ask about, you know, how – because I still don't even know how you got involved either. But, like, after Sway passed and then I rescued Neola, it put me inside of the shelters. I'd never been to a shelter before prior to that. Never. So – like, you only know what you hear about shelters, and then once you're inside and on the ground level, you have experiences. I started writing about it, so that's how all that went. But, like, how, you know, what started this for you, and, like, how did you get involved?
Before we get to me, I'm interested in, you did something that it took me many years to figure out. What made you go the shelter route and not the purebred, I'm going to go buy a pit bull pure breed?
Well, because I never really thought like that. I mean, Sway, you know, Sway was a dog that I found, and still, I didn't even know she was a pit bull. Like, when I took her in to get her registered, the pound in Troy looked at me and told me, that's a pit bull, you need to surrender it. Because this is in Ohio. We both know Jeff and the work that he's done documenting how they rescinded the language, the vicious dog. Okay, I lived under that, just like Jeff did and Eric. So
we're referencing, by the way, we're referencing Jeff Thiemann.
Yeah. Yeah, Jeff Thiemann, yeah. Yeah, filmmaker for Guilty Till Proven Innocent, and his whole documentary is about how they, how the Ohio legislators rescinded that language.
And you were there? You were there at that time?
I was in Ohio living under that. So when we had sway, we had to have insurance. We had to have her muzzled in public.
Wow.
If she was out on the sidewalk, which, whatever, that there was just all kinds of just regulatory things. We had to have a run built outside, even if she lived inside, which she did. She lived with me inside, but we still had to have a run built outside with a chain link top that was like 8 feet tall and X amount of liability insurance and all these things that were just strict, targeted to pit bulls, because in the Ohio law, it called them vicious dogs.
Right.
They were automatically vicious dogs. And that's what got rescinded here a couple years ago.
Yeah.
I was out here at that time, so I didn't actually, when I watched Jeff's documentary, when I watched the screening of it afterwards, after watching it, you know, I asked a question and I couldn't even like talk about it because it made me emotional. Like, I was asking a question and I couldn't even get the question out because I had just seen it. Like, I saw the video of the vote, like, for the first time in my life. So just seeing that was like, damn, like, I'd never seen that before, so it was like super emotional for me.
That's crazy that you lived, that you were there, and you had to go through all that. I mean, for me, my first pit was a boy named Petey. In 87, 88, my brother wanted a pit bull, my younger brother, and my mom knew somebody that she worked with that had a litter of puppies, and we went into kind of the bad side of town, and there was this litter of little black and gray puppies, and this little pit had a little white tip on his tail, and that's the one we picked, and the guy was bragging that he was descendant of one of the pit bulls that played Petey from the R Gang 20s TV show, and so we named him Petey, and to us, again, this was just a dog, and he was the sweetest thing ever, and we had a neighbor that had this pit bull named Max that was a bit of a terror. He never attacked anybody, but I'm going back thinking in time, if that dog had been around now, they would have crucified him and the owners. So it started with Petey, and he quickly became my dog, and I guess it was a backyard breeder. And the reason why I asked you about what made you go into a shelter was because I was one of those people, and the words, don't go to a shelter because you don't know what you're going to get, actually came out of my mouth more than once.
Wow.
And I think back about that, and I think about the dogs that I've rescued and my boy Buddy, who, just like Sway, is my shadow. And it seems to me, and if you ask anybody who rescues, here's another little rescue I found on the side of the road, those guys that you rescue and you pull out of those dire situations, they know it. And they do not want to leave your side. And I could not have been more wrong about pulling a dog from a shelter. So from Petey, the backyard breeder, which I'm going to go into in details in my book, he was a casualty of my ignorance. And at that time, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have a Petco, a PetSmart. We had nobody telling us what to do. We had no Caesar Milan. We didn't have the access to information literally at our fingertips that we have now, and I think of all the casualties that have happened in my life alone, and it makes me very sad, because Petey, I actually surrendered him after 9 years. It breaks my heart to this day. I surrendered him after 9 years, and I surrendered him because he attacked a new dog that I brought, and I surrendered him to the pound, and they put him to sleep.
I did not. Does anybody know? I mean,
no, that's,
does anybody
that's,
know that?
No, I'm going into detail about my book, but, oh, wow, you know what? I have him right here. I don't know if you can see that.
Yeah, I can see it. Yeah.
Okay, so the one right here up on the top is Petey, and that's Hershey. Mm. So after I got Petey, I got Hershey, also from a breeder. She hung herself. You see how I got her tethered?
Mm-hmm.
In that Jeep, she hung herself in a Jeep when I was in when I was in somewhere, I had those zip-up windows, and they got along like peas and carrots, to quote Forrest Gump. They were the bestest of friends, Petey and Hershey. And I left her in the Jeep, and I had her tethered, and I had one of them stupid zip windows, and she pushed it down, jumped through, and hung herself, and I came out and found her.
Bro. Sorry about, like, oh my God.
Yeah.
That's wild.
So here's the really messed up thing. My head is starting to hurt right now. Petey and her were the best of friends, and so I got another dog from a breeder. Her name was Reese. And so what happened was Petey, I left them alone when I went somewhere, and she was a pup, and I left food out. I mean, trial and error, and I'm the biggest, and this is also in my book, to quote myself, I'm the biggest shithead of them all.
Not everybody has to. Everybody has to, like, you know, we don't have access, just like you were saying, to people that know. So it's like you actually learn. You learn only after you go through it. At least I had to live through and learn by, and then adjust accordingly. So,
So Petey attacked Hershey when I was gone. She was almost dead when I got home. Again, I left them alone together with food out. I want to make that clear. I was being an irresponsible owner. I had no idea, and that's how I've learned since then. So he beat her up pretty bad. She got better. And then I really started getting into these dogs because, you know, like he said with Sway, they're really amazing dogs. And so I brought another one home. And here's the thing. The reason I'm bringing all this up is Petey had his soulmate in Hershey, and I thought all dogs should get along like that. So I just thought, you know, I could leave these two alone together. I can leave these two alone together, and it's not always the case. And it's very important for people watching this or for people that bring any dog, not just pit bulls, any dog into your life, any power breed, I always say, Rotts, Pitties, Dobies, German Shepherds, Mastiffs, you got to be aware of the personalities. Each dog is an individual, and the point of all this is they're individuals, and the peas and carrots that these guys weren't the peas and carrots that Reese and Petey were. So I'm sure he missed Hershey, and this new dog came along that was getting all my attention, and then I left him alone, and that all contributes to what happened to Reese. So I started getting into really loving these dogs and wanting to help them, and then I got another one from a breeder, and his name was Muggsy. And Petey went after Muggsy, and all this stuff that I've learned since then about behavior and personalities and body language and cues, I can see all of that back. Hindsight's 20/20, they say, and it absolutely is. I can see from the time I got Petey to Reese to Muggsy, all the problems that I didn't address, which led to me ultimately taking Petey to the pound and getting rid of him because he wouldn't get along. And it was all completely avoidable. And, oh, by the way, during this time, which was the 80s and the 90s, we didn't know about crates. And if you had said anything, if you say crates to some people I still come across and say that crates are cruel. At that time, crates were a no-no, a cruel thing to society, but of course everybody in dog shows and anybody that knew anything knew that crates were the lifesaver of everything, of your shoes, of peeing on your house, of separation anxiety. Crates are the answer. So I have this dog that's giving all these cues and all these this body language minus and no crate. By the way, this is Mickey, just jumped on my lap. And with all this, I didn't know what the hell I was doing, and I ended up getting rid of my best friend, Petey, my first pit bull, the reason it started all this, because I thought that he just couldn't get along. And it's sad. It's sad because I learned the hard way, And Muggsy died of cancer. So with Muggsy, I had Reese, and they had a litter, not on purpose. I didn't mean to be a backyard breeder, but, you know, hey, I was one of those guys that, I'm not going to fix my dog. I'm gonna breed him. I'm going to make money. I'm going to get rich off my purebred dogs because they come from this line, and I can get $1,000 for these pit bulls. And that was my mindset. And I address all this in my book, and I'm taking complete responsibility. I'm not bragging. Hey, quiet you. So I had some puppies. They all died of cancer, and then I ended up with Shorty and Buster, who I lost in 2012 to hemangiosarcoma.
I met Buster.
Yeah, Buster was the that's a little bit of my background. You know, all the other stuff is pretty much well known. If you're following either of us, the Kissing Booth, Buster is the inspiration behind the Kissing Booth. He came along and you met him. He was 75 pounds of love in a furry coat. He was just the most beautiful soul, the beautiful creature ever, and along with Shorty. And I started training with them, and my learning curve was from 18 to 30. When did I get them? 04. Jesus, to 34. My learning curve. It took me that many years to get it right and to figure out how to train these dogs to get along. And Buster and Shorty were just like peas and carrots again from the very beginning, and the sweetest dogs ever. And they came along, and can you hear these guys in the background making too much noise?
Just a little bit.
Quiet.
No big deal.
I just got a headache from that whole story. Get off. So it took me that long to figure it out that crates are the answer, that the dogs are individuals, that there's definitely body language, there's definitely cues we have to look out for, and I'm going to stop talking because my head hurts.
Nah, man, you're being like, I mean, first of all, I didn't know any of that, and secondly, you got to be applauded for how, like, honest and raw you were about all that, because, I mean, you've been through a lot of stuff, and most people would just pretend that that didn't happen, or pretend like they don't need to, you know, take accountability for any of that, or explain how you came to be who you are, basically.
Yeah.
And that's real. Like, that's super important. About your dog, it hanging itself, that is like, that breaks my heart for you.
Yeah.
Just hearing that.
Oh, man. And it's funny, man, because it's not funny, but it's weird how, I was just thinking about this the other day when I think about, hey, that's enough. I'm trying to do a show here. when I think about, I think all the dogs that led up to Buster, and if Hershey, I went back into like one of them Back to the Future, moments of, you know, time travel of, if this hadn't happened, I wouldn't have had this dog. And if I hadn't lost Hershey, it wouldn't have led to Reese, which wouldn't have led to Muggsy, which wouldn't have led to Frankie, then Shorty and Buster. And the way I got Buster and Shorty, I mean, the way I got Buster was crazy. I mean, okay, all this time, by the way, I'm going through breeders. You know, a friend of mine that I used to work with, she said something really brilliant. She said, pre-rescues, because we know that the last study I heard was 25% of pure breeds end up in the shelters. So, I'm not sure how accurate that is, but the point is I got them from a breeder, but we know, especially with pit bulls, you know, they go through the ringer when it comes to owners. You know, you're lucky. I read another thing, I don't know how true it is, 1 in 10 dogs gets a home for life. And maybe it was pit bulls, but that was just something I read recently. But I was going to these breeders, and I was looking on these websites, and I went out. I had put money down on this woman who was really well known in California for having this great line of pit bulls, and I put money down, and I went out to meet her dogs, and I was so disappointed with the way her dogs looked, the way I just was not impressed. I left. I didn't even get my deposit, and I stayed at my friend's house who lives in L.A., and I got on the Internet, and I said, well, I'm out here. Let me see, and I went through a list of breeders, and this guy I called, and he said, yeah, you know what? I have the pick of the litter that I was going to keep, but if you want, this you come take a look at him. And I went, and there was Buster and this little runt female, and I had them both in my hands, and I was like, oh, I need to sleep on this. So I went back to my friend's house, and I came back the next morning, and I got Buster. And, you know, he came from a breeder, and that's not important. That's not the reason why he was such a great dog, because I have Bandit here, who's just as sweet as Buster, and has taken over his role in the kissing booth, who is a ball. I mean, he's the sweetest thing ever. You met Bandit. He's exactly like Buster. The kissing booth wouldn't work without Buster, because Buster was the magnet. He was this big, beautiful specimen, but on top of that, he was just as sweet, and he wanted you to come kiss him. So there's a few of my dogs that are kind of shy, standoffish, but when Buster gets all the attention, now Bandit, then everybody joins in. If you've been or you've seen the pictures of the kissing booth, it's beautiful. It works. It's a tongue bath, you know, to the fifth power.
Yeah, the kissing booth is awesome, and I got to say, personally, like, because I've met all your dogs, actually. I'm at Buster, and I'm at all your current dogs.
Yeah.
You got like, the best-behaved dogs I've ever seen with my own two eyes, like, by far. So.
Buddy wants to say hi. Come here, Buddy. Come here. He's a whiner. I got Buddy at the lead animal shelter here in Las Vegas, and he would have surely been dead if I hadn't have saved him. And by the way, we can add links to this, right?
Yeah.
Okay. We're gonna post his story up there. I have it documented when I went to the shelter, and he was the last one that I saved. I was doing this thing when Peace Love and Pit Bulls first started. I'm gonna get back to Sway Love too. Remind me. When Peace Love and Pit Bulls first started, my idea was I'd been kicking around the idea of doing some kind of rescue or helping somehow. And you know, I'm the king of procrastination. So, I was like, you know, hey, I don't have the money, I don't have the facilities, what can I do? And then, remind me, we got to put this link up as well, I saw this video called Just One Dog.
Yeah.
You saw that. Cam mm-hmm. Cocker did the story about Stanley, this white pit bull, Mickey, this white pit bull who was covered in Demodex. It was Christmas Eve, they went in looking for, I think it was a Cocker Spaniel, and they saw this pit bull, I could be mistaken, but they saw this pit bull just in the worst shape, just broken, and they saved him Christmas Eve. And it was a beautiful story, and he lives in a great home family now. And I said, you know what, I can do that. I can take one dog, and I can train him, and I can find him a home. So to up until Buddy, I did it about 6 or 7 times, and every one of them is still in a good home, and flourishing, and it's a beautiful story, all of them. And they're all on the website, peacelovepitbulls.org. I think 3 of them are. And my point with this that we'll touch on in probably future podcasts is saving a dog, but not just pulling him out of a bad situation to later put him in another bad situation. Pull them, train them, get them going, and set them into a house where they're going to be fine. And that's what we did. And then I was only able to do that with one dog at a time because I have plenty here, and I ended up keeping Buddy. So I haven't been able to do that because I don't have the room. So I've been more focused on training and doing what I was just talking about, getting people to get, when they get their dog, to keep their dog. I read something like, what is it, 40% go back after they're rescued? And
yeah, I don't know. It's hard to pinpoint statistics like that. But, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of people that aren't equipped to just dogs in general, just to know how to be a proper dog owner, whatever that looks like. Because everybody, it's a subject, subjective thing and everybody has different opinions, but like so many shelter dogs end up there because either, you know, a landlord kicks the dog out because of the breed it is, or people don't have the resources, or people don't have the time. And that's not to say that like everybody's bad, because certainly aren't, but just people at different levels are...
They just don't know.
Yeah.
And the thing is there's so much... Shorty, by the way, making an appearance. There's so much information at our fingertips. And man, can you imagine having the internet just first started doing this? I mean, just the crate alone. Anybody watching this, if you don't know, the crate is the lifesaver. Your shoes will be safe. The side of your couch will be safe if you get a crate. I mean, and watch the dog whisperer. I mean, there's going to be a lot of people hating on Caesar, but as far as I'm concerned, that this world is a better place because of that guy.
This is the thing, man, like with just using that as an example, and, you know, I've seen plenty of Caesar shows, and I don't know him or anything, or I don't have, seems like a good person to me. He's done a hell of a lot. But like what the point that I want to make is like there is a lot of people that don't like him for a certain reason, but like why can't we as people, if we don't agree with one thing that someone does, why do we have to cut them off?
That's right.
And I know I've used this example with the no kill stuff and Nathan Winograd because like people with that are either supportive of no kill or totally against it, and there's no middle ground. And it's like, why not? Because like he supplied so much good information. And even if you don't reach the level that qualifies you in one person's mind as being a genuine no killer or not or whatever, like there's so many positive steps that should be taken and listened to. It doesn't matter who's saying it. I mean, if it's good information, it's good information. So it's like back to Caesar. I don't know why people hate Caesar or love him, because like regardless of, you're never going to agree with 100% of what somebody does. But he's offered much to the animal community, a lot of positive stuff, and he doesn't need to be discarded because like some person doesn't agree with how he yanked on a dog's neck or something at one point. It's like people need to have a broader view of like broader perspective and not be so judgmental in detailed moments and just like. Everything else just goes away because they did that one thing.
The big picture. Talking about the big picture, and it happens a lot in rescue. I was really disheartened to find out in 2010 when I started this. You know, I thought, hey, we're gonna get all these people together and we're just gonna save all the dogs. And then I was like, wait a minute, this person doesn't like this person, and this person's bad mouthing this one, and this rescue is not going to give you a dog because you feed raw. And this person is not going to help you place a dog because of your training method. And it's like, wait a minute, did they pull that dog out of a definite death sentence? Yes. Okay, then what the fuck are you talking about? So the thing with Caesar is, I'm convinced that most of those people, because it's all message boards, are trolls. And here's that word again. Most of those are trolls. And you look at my Bandit video. We're going to post the Bandit video, too. There's 4.5 million views, and there's got to be...
Of him on the treadmill?
Yeah, a Bandit on the treadmill. And there's probably about 800 dislikes on there. And then you've got the people, and what I do now is, you can't just throw your shit up there. It has to be approved, your comment, and if it's anything negative, you're out, you're banned. And it's great because when these people write these whole long diatribes of how I'm a worthless person because I have a buddy who's on the treadmill, tied to the treadmill to exercise him, and I'm a horrible person and I'm neglecting my dog, and I'm fighting my dogs, by the way, when there's four other dogs running around these dogs, in the video, and what a terrible person I am. So the funny thing is they go through this whole long person, and you're so bad, and you're doing this, and then, you know, it's like when a tree falls in the woods. If there's no one there to hear it, because you're
like, don't people
know? Comments never going to get on my site. So my point is there's people that all they do is search the web to poke you and to troll you and to just be a pain in the ass. And my point is, we have Caesar, who's got kazillion more followers than me or Bandit has. So you're always going to have this small amount of people that just got nothing but bad shit to say.
Well, people, don't people realize that, like, dogs need exercise? Like, why does a human use a treadmill?
Right.
I mean, you watch the video, you got your dog walking on a treadmill. It's not like sprinting against its will. It's walking on a treadmill because it knows how to use the treadmill, and it enjoys it because it gives them exercise.
There's
nothing wrong with that. And then you got a little Bandit as a puppy, like, curious about what the heck is this treadmill and trying to jump on. It's like a cute video. How can anybody watch that and be like a turd about it? Like, it doesn't make any sense. But it does, but yet it does, because it's the internet.
It's simple. One word. Troll. They're called trolls.
But that's kind of crazy that you started Peace, Love, and Pitbulls in 2010. I didn't know that, because that's when I started doing what I'm doing too. I thought you started a little bit earlier than that, but
no, you know,
2010 for both of us officially.
Well, that's cool. I didn't know that either. I'm back to that. I have to say one comment that I got was it was on wimp.com. I think it was Wimp. One of these sites put the video up and didn't give us credit, by the way. And then this one person wrote, why would anybody use a treadmill unless they were gonna fight? And then I was like, oh, okay, so by your standard, anybody who uses a treadmill is going to fight. So you know, you get people like that.
Well, that's Michael Vick. That's what the Michael Vick thing did, because like with all the media attention that got, and treadmills were obviously confiscated from the area.
Yeah.
Because it's a tool. You can use a tool for good and bad.
Yeah.
You know? But just because that was all over the news, treadmills somehow got lumped in with all the other like heinous stuff that Mr. Vick was doing.
Yeah.
And of course he was using the treadmill probably for some crazy shit, but like, doesn't mean everybody's Michael Vick with a treadmill.
Yeah.
I got a treadmill.
But the thing is Caesar had, you know, shown that years before as rehabilitating dogs, and for me, and it's funny because if these people would just read the description, you know, I had to spell it out to the lowest common denominator. I have 5 dogs and I have a puppy. And if you're OCD germ freak Howard Hughes like me, I'm not going to mess around and have my dogs getting sick, because when one dog gets sick, guess what? Times that by 5. So I got a little puppy who doesn't have all his shots. I can't take him out to the park. I can't take my other dogs out to the park, because if they step in shit that's got parvo in it and they bring it back to the pup, guess what? My pup dies. So in the description, it says, the POP pack is quarantined until Bandit has had all his shots. Period. That's it. That's all you need to know. But, you know, again, I don't want to focus on the trolls. There's too much other stuff to worry about. So let's just move on. Where are we at now, time-wise?
Honestly, like, I was curious about that as well, and I have no idea.
I think we're an hour.
There's no counting clock on this.
You got those links. You got the Stanley. I'll send you the Buddy video. Buddy's story, how I got him, because I mentioned that. And then should we throw in Jeff's website or link?
Yeah, we can definitely do that. And, Jeff, you know Jeff really well too, right? I mean, you had him out in Vegas to screen.
Yeah.
Look forward to talking to him at some point as well. He's actually been to Carson with me, and rescued.
He was out here right before he went out there.
He rescued a dog from Carson.
I know. It's great.
A dog that he met when he was out there, and that Presley, and that dog is in a home right now. Awesome dog. Super sweet. Just the thought of, you know, them putting that dog down.
Jeff, what was that? Did Jeff keep that dog?
Nah, Jeff did not keep the dog. He didn't have intentions to keep the dog. But he fell in love with Presley on site at Carson. So he's like, I got to do anything possible to get this dog out of here. So he privately networked with his rescue people locally in Ohio. He found, I think, actually Gene Keating is the rescue that took Presley into her rescue, and then he ended up getting adopted. So he's now in a forever home. But
that's awesome, bro. Okay, let's go back to like a sign-off. I appreciate you including me on this. I think it's a great idea. I'm actually really excited about doing more of these, and I don't think it's going to be the task that I thought it was going to be, you know, because we can sit down for an hour and discuss topics and have people on, you know?
Yeah.
Getting people, yeah, to voice their stuff. I got a bunch of ideas to bring people in. We got to figure this out. Maybe we can, in the future, get some sponsors and start and get some really good, gear going. Maybe, which is absolutely possible. And I'm looking forward to more of these, man. I'm excited.
But there's so much stuff that goes on a daily basis with dog related issues, shelter related issues, breed specific legislation, training, which you're extremely well versed in. I can't add to that discussion really, but yeah, like I was telling you and explaining, the idea is like I learned from listening to other people like communicate about it, and you begin to shape your own perspectives. So hopefully in the future when we have people on that and we just talk about issues amongst each other, it makes some kind of a difference. So that's really the point here.
You know what we should also do is, for everybody, this is going out there, if you haven't read Karen DeLeese's book, The Pitbull Placebo, get it now. It's a free download. We'll post that too. You can go to the National Canine Research Council website, and it's a PDF there for free. But it's on my website, peacelovingpitbulls.org. You can go in to read, and there's a link there. You can download it. I guess we don't really need to do it. They can just go there and download it. We don't have to add that link unless you want to. But it's a free download. It's PDF. You must read that book. And for training and getting started, I would also suggest reading Cesar Millan's book, A Member of the Family. I just listened to the audio book. It is so insightful. It's so brilliant. That guy really knows what he's talking about for people getting started with puppyhood and everything on up. It's really a must read.
Being that this is the first one, hopefully people, we talked about a lot about our own stories, what kind of led us here. Hopefully that's interesting to people, because we probably won't do another podcast that's going to be like this. It's probably going to be more about kind of things that have happened maybe last week prior to us recording, and it's going to be focused on different issues. Well, we just want to give you an insight into who we are, what kind of led us on this path, and dogs are individuals, pit bulls are dogs. Pit bulls are not different from the dog population. And I just want to close, and I'm going to close every show, and I told you this, I'm going to close every show with putting out a challenge to Colleen Lynn, Corey Nelson, the thing that is Don James, Tony Selesky, any of you guys that want to actually come on and debate somebody that can actually counter your points, and it's like on a fair level ground. You have this is an open invitation. So at any point you guys want to come on. It would be lovely, unedited, and to just talk about these things, because you guys all deal in sound bites and unverified statistics and all this stuff, and you're never countered. So like, the point is to counter each other and let the populace decide who's telling the truth. Every day that goes by, every day that we wake up, every morning that comes along, breed-specific legislation is that further out of the picture, that much more discredited. Everybody that lives in the opposite world, every day that you go to sleep, the next morning you wake up, it's worse for you, because people are more accepting and realizing that these are just dogs. They're not monsters that they're made out to be. They're just dogs.